This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and for those who dream of writing, and for everyone who loves to read. Because, listen, I have a little bit problem here. I have an echo, so if I'm a little slow, I'm sorry. Oh, boy. Okay, because this is an important day. I have a wonderful guest on. I've been looking forward to talking to him. Stephen Hartog. He's a New York Times best-selling author of The Last of the Seven. Hi, Stephen. Do you hear me? Okay.
Please record your message. When you finish recording.
Oh, boy. Okay. We have a problem. Hey, Houston, we got a problem. We've got double problems. I've got an echo in my ear, and I don't know where Stephen is because he was supposed to call in. Okay, this is not going to be a fun day. I was looking forward to it. A great day. You know, it's really funny. We had an electrical surge here 2 weeks ago, and they are just put, look at, I don't know if I'm going to be able to do this, and they just put in a new board, and it's not so great. So, is he on? Stephen, are you there?
Yes, ma'am, I am right here.
Okay, Stephen, I have a feeling you're going to really have to handle this. You're going to have to handle this a little bit more than normal, because I have an echo here, and I am trying to compensate. Whoa. All right, Stephen, let's start again. I am so happy to welcome you here. The Last of the Seven is a great book, and I really was looking forward to talking more, but I'm going to let you do most of the talking, because this is a little bit driving me crazy. Let's talk about this book. We'll start with the cover. There we have a cover of Seven Parachutes, and you tell the story of where the action takes place, and I'm letting you take it away.
All right, thanks, Pat. I really appreciate you having me on. It's a great opportunity to be able to talk about something I've been working on for a long, long time. I've written a lot of books. I started in the 90s with some espionage novels, and then I went on to write In the Company of Heroes with Mike Durant about Black Hawk Down, Somalia, the true story. I wrote The Night Stalkers. I was editor-in-chief of a special operations magazine for years. And then I came back around to pretty much what had started in my childhood in the 60s. My mom was a refugee from the Nazis in Austria. My dad was an American GI, and I was raised on a lot of these true stories about World War II and my parents' adventures and their friends' adventures during the war, you know, the Greatest Generation. And then I was also sort of imbued with this literary culture of World War II authors, not just Hemingway and those folks, but also Alistair MacLean, The Guns of Navarone, and, you know, Leon Uris, Exodus, and, you know, a lot of these authors I was enthralled with as a child. And, of course, children of the parents from the World War II generation are always fascinated by that. So we come around to 10 years ago, and I wrote a book called The Soul of a Thief, which was about a young half Jewish, half-Christian, Austrian boy who winds up in the German army serving at the feet of an SS colonel. and that takes place in France in 1944. They both fall in love with the same French girl who also happens to be Jewish. And so that's sort of a, that book was sort of a diary. And that book was based on an actual true story about my great uncle, Alex, who was half Jewish, half Christian, what they call in German a Mischling. And he, to hide from the Nazis, actually joined the Luftwaffe and served in the German Air Force until they figured out his racial background and sent him to a concentration camp. So that was the impetus for that story. At the end of that book, as often happens with fiction writers, these seven characters appear, and they appear to be German SS troops, seven of them. But they're actually Jewish British commandos in disguise on a mission. And they make a brief appearance at the end of The Soul of a Thief. And from there, I thought about it for a year or so and realized that these were the guys who were going to make up the last of the seven. So that was the impetus for this novel, which I've been working on for 3 years. The last of the seven.
Isn't it wonderful how, when you're doing research for a book, one little thing can spark so much interest?
Oh, yes. Absolutely. You know, Pat, you come across just a detail of something that you're stunned by, and you go, I have to pull this thread. Well, many, many years ago, when I lived in Israel and was serving there in the Israeli army as a paratrooper, I met some of these elderly men who had served in these British commando units in North Africa in World War II, and I was just stunned by their stories of what they had done and what they'd endured, and that sort of stayed in my mind until I began to do research on the Special Interrogation Group, which was a secret group of Jewish commandos in North Africa serving in the British Army in World War II, all dressed and trained as, to the T, Nazi Africa Corps troops. And these young men were all orphans. They had all lost their families to the Nazis in Germany, Austria, France. And they volunteered for the British Army to strike back at the Germans. And they would be used to get British commandos like the Special Air Service, the famous SAS, or the Long Range Desert Group behind German lines. And sometimes these young men, dressed as Germans, would pretend that they were escorting these Brits as to prisoners of war camps. And then they'd get them behind German lines, and together they would all raid German airfields and blow up German aircraft. They raided Tobruk, where there was a failed invasion. But so that was the impetus for where I was going to start this book, with one of these young men who is the last of seven Special Interrogation Group Jewish commandos who've been captured and killed, executed by the Germans, and he's the last one. And that's where the book starts, and that's why it's called The Last of the Seven.
And, of course, Bernard Froelich is a fascinating character. And tell us about him and the beginning of the book, how he drops down into a British, basically, where the British are holding, waiting.
Well, Bernard Froelich, at this point in the story, when the story opens, he has escaped from a German prisoner of war camp. He is still wearing German uniform that he stole from a camp guard after killing him and escaping. He's terribly wounded, and he has walked nearly 300 miles through the desert to get back to British lines. That's how the story opens. And that is also based on a true story. I generally, historical fiction is, in my mind, the seamless weaving of historical facts with characters who might have been involved in those events. But even those characters have to be based on true historical characters in order for it to feel and seem real. And that's how I do it. So you imbibe those characters with people that you know, their personalities and your own experience. I have a lot of military experience, so that's sort of easy for me to do. But then you have to base these things on truth in order for it to be effective. And so, in fact, there were a number of such commandos who escaped from the Germans or in the middle of combat, you know, were missing in action and walked across huge tracts of the Sahara Desert to try to get back to their own lines. So there were a few cases like that that are true, and the Sahara is impossible to survive, but they did. And so I based this opening on a compilation of a couple of the adventures of these fellows, and that's how the story opens. And he finds himself back in British lines. They don't believe him because he's dressed as a Nazi. He has to prove who he is. And I don't want to give the rest of the story away,
that's
how it unfolds.
Yeah, one of the sections that I particularly enjoyed was in Sicily, because I was on a film set in Sicily, and I had the opportunity to tour Sicily, and particularly the military locations. Because I've always, well, really, if I select a book to read just for fun, I usually pick a military history. I have hundreds and hundreds of books in military history. So when I was in Sicily, it was fascinating. And I did meet quite a few older people who remembered clearly what happened in World War II.
Oh yeah, Sicily was, well, I'm sure we both love Sicily, especially since I try to never write about some place that I haven't been. So pretty much in every book that I've written, if I haven't been to the place, I'm going to go there. Because you can't really write about something that you haven't touched and smelled. You can't do it by Google. Yeah, Sicily, I mean, all the German bunkers are still, you're driving down the road and you see a machine gun emplacement.
I know, it's fascinating. I had the opportunity to drive all around Sicily, and with this wonderful, you know, it is a fascinating country. And I went from Palermo, where we were shooting a movie, down all the way to Syracuse, and in between saw all of the military people. When you look at it now, it's so peaceful and it's so quiet, it's hard to believe what they went through.
Oh yeah, but there are remnants of it everywhere.
Oh yeah.
And if I can tell you a quick really interesting story which kind of sort of combines history and sort of the writer's views thing, when I decided that the centerpiece of this book, and we won't tell the listeners what happens, but
no.
The centerpiece of this book takes place in Sicily, and I decided that it was going to take place at an American field hospital, and I decided that that was going to be in a monastery. So I just went on, you know, took out my maps, and I started doing a little research, and I just plucked this monastery, which looked visually correct, in Agrigento. The Santo Spirito. And I said, okay, that's where it's going to happen. Then I went to Sicily. Now, I knew nothing about this monastery other than it was beautiful and it was still active and there were, you know, nuns there and so forth. So I went there. And it was exactly as I pictured it, which was terrific. And you can stay there. They've got a B&B, you know, a few rooms. So I stayed there for a while. And on the second day, I went to talk to my escort, who was one of the sisters. Lovely nun, you know, one of the sisters of the monastery. And I said to her, so, Mary Catherine, what was here during World War II? And she said to me, a field hospital. And I was just stunned. But sometimes that's how those things happen. She told me it had been an American field hospital during World War II, and that there were Americans and Brits there and some Italians. And so I said, well, I guess my pin fell in the right place of the map, because here we are. So,
that's what I call a golden thread. And I've discovered this ever since I started Joy on Paper, that so many times I am connected to authors because I have been to the same location they're writing about, I've stayed in the same hotel, you know, and there are these magical things that happen sometimes. You see something and maybe somewhere in another time, it just comes to you. And yeah, so I can see that happening. And your writing is so cinematic. You know, I'm repeating myself here because this is echo is driving me crazy. But your writing is so cinematic that I saw it as a movie. I saw this whole thing as a movie, and I thought, oh my goodness, I hope somebody picks it up. I love when I come across a book that just takes me into another world. It's you know, it's really exciting. And so you already have the locations set.
I have the locations. First of all, I want to tell you that on my end, you sound perfectly normal. So that's just in your earphones, whatever's going on over there.
Yeah,
they'll fix that.
It's like what happens to those singers at the national anthem and the, you know.
Yeah.
And sometimes they, if they're not used to it, but this is the first time it's happened to me. So.
Well, you sound perfectly normal here. And thank you for the cinematic reference, because I do try, you know, I'm a big cinema buff and classic cinema and that sort of thing. And I think that if you can, with your words, you know, lots of readers don't have the patience they used to have, you know? I mean, people used to really relish the idea of an author spending the time to take them on a ride. And it's really great when somebody like you or some of my other readers say what you've just said, which is that they really enjoy, you know, being taken on this adventure and being able to smell it and feel it and taste it. And that's the kind of writing I like. So that's the kind of writing I try to do. And, you know, movie, will it be from your mouth to God's ears, as they say. Maybe somebody will pick it up.
Well, I hope so. And maybe from my mouth to some people in Hollywood, because I'm trying to promote those books that I think would make great films, because I am so tired of most of the trash that they're filming, you know?
Oh, I know.
So that's why your book, I mean, this is perfect. I can see the entire movie. I mean, I could actually probably even write the budget out. I know this kind of thing. The Last of the Seven would make a terrific movie. And I know that a friend of ours, I'm also promoting, I've been doing more and more of this because, you know, I've tried to get to the people in Hollywood to find great properties. And unfortunately, they're sort of stuck, but that's why they're not doing so well in some areas. But for example, Jerome Preisler's Civil War Commando, William Cushing, and the daring raid to sink the ironclad CSS Albemarle is a book that when I read it, for me, I actually forgot I was reading a book. It was a film
Jerome
in my head.
Oh, Jerome is an amazing... Jerome is a brilliant writer, and he has had a career that spans so many decades, and he's done so many things, and he comes from a World War II background, and he just wrote a book that I just bought and haven't started yet, but I'm dying to get into it. First to Jump, I believe it's called, about the Pathfinders at Normandy. And I agree with you. I mean, you know, Hollywood, instead of picking up material and properties that are written by brilliant authors like Jerome, they're making cartoons. And basically, you know, the comic book stuff, I guess it's profitable. But you know what's really interesting, Patrick, is that recently the biggest box office was Top Gun Maverick, because that's really what people want, live humans on great adventures. And, yeah, maybe they're making a profit on you know, these cartoons and comic book features and the video games.
But they're missing
that are
a big audience because there are people who want to see heroic figures, who want to see, well, like Jerome's wonderful, wonderful William Cushing, who was lost in history until Jerome wrote about him. And the same with you. Here, you've written a wonderful book about something that, again, was lost in history, this whole X-Troop idea. Nobody knows about it, and it would make a terrific film.
Well, all, you know, those of us, including yourself and our, you know, our writer friends, and I mean, you have a wonderful program that gives a platform to writers that nobody else does like this. I haven't seen any other program that does this for literature or for writers or anything like that. So,
I'm doing my best, and I want to do more, and I'm hoping to expand the program so I have more time. You know, like right now, I don't have a lot of time. You know, I have to sort of stop this pretty soon. But before I do, I wanted to ask, your writing is so good. I mean, it's lyrical, it's poetical in places, it's deeply heartfelt. What's your literary background as a, you know, who, other than, you know, popular fiction, did you have sort of a deeper dig into literature?
Yes. Oh, and by the way, somebody just handed me a note that says that I'm not sure if your listeners can hear you, but I'm not sure they can hear me. So you might want to check that. I really don't know, but somebody called in to us and said that they can hear you, but they don't hear me.
Okay. If there's a problem, I'm going to have you back once this thing is fixed,
fine. So
that we can talk more.
Yeah, that's fine. And you know, maybe you're recording it, so we'll have that. We were talking about literature. Well, my educational background was actually theater, because at the time when I went to college, I wasn't sure what I wanted to do, but I came from sort of, my dad was a musician. We had lots of people in the theater world. I chose that, and I got a degree in it, in the middle of which I quit. I joined the Merchant Marine for a year because I had to go on some adventures, and I came back and I got my degree. And I studied a lot of literature by myself, all the greats. I did not have a formal education in writing, but I did have a formal education in dialogue.
That's why it's so cinematic.
That's why I believe is why my writing is cinematic, is because I, you know, that's what I studied, that format, and in particular, characters and how people speak to each other and how they don't speak to each other, but you can discern what they're thinking from a look and the ability to be able to describe that look or that physical behavior. So my literary education is really a theatrical one.
But I see in your writing this sort of deeper into really serious literature that comes through in your writing. That's why I think it's so great.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
I'm sorry about this mess with the telephones. It's going to drive me crazy. And I will check if the recording doesn't sound good. I'll have you back. Right now, I'm actually in the studio surrounded by, they have boxes and other computers, checking the computers. So if it doesn't, because I want a really good recording of this to put on the website. And because I'm trying to attract more and more Hollywood people to Joy on Paper, so that they can put some joy on screen.
Well, I really thank you for having me. I know that if we have tech issues, I'm always available. We can do the whole thing again, because you know, we've got a lot more we can talk about,
and
we
yes.
we get each other. So Anytime, and again, I really appreciate the opportunity. So thank you so much.
Well, it's been great talking to you, and I'll get back to you. And as a matter of fact, I wanted to talk about some of your other books because I love them. And as you know, I also lived in Israel, and so I was involved in a couple of events over there. And so I think it will be lots of fun. We have lots to talk about. Okay?
Oh, yes, we do. Yes, okay. We haven't even started.
Yeah, exactly. I'll have you back soon. Okay. Bye-bye.
Thanks
now.
So much.
Okay, and meanwhile, wait. I just want to tell people that they can go to your website because you have everything there, right? And
Yes. And it's just my name, StephenHartov.com.
Yeah, StephenHartov.com. Again, I don't know if it's driving me crazy. And the book is The Last of the Seven, and it's available online. And I don't know about bookstores anymore, but I hope so. And we'll have you back soon, okay?
Thanks so much.
Okay. Bye-bye, Steve. Whoa, this is not fun. Everybody, I don't even care if we do commercials, don't do commercials. I can just go straight to Allison if Allison is on. As everybody knows, here on Joy on Paper, Thanksgiving Day is an important day for me, and I love Thanksgiving Day. And for, at least for 5 years, 6 years, when I started doing interviews with National Geographic authors and editors and photographers, it occurred to me that it would be just wonderful to turn Thanksgiving Day into Nat Geo Day. And so ever since then, this is what I have been promoting, because there is nothing better than a Nat Geo book as a gift. We are coming up into gift season, and so we have a lot of wonderful, wonderful books that people can select from. Is Allison on yet? I'm waiting for Allison. Okay, so we're going to have her in a few minutes. Oh, if she's not on the phone, do you want to do commercials? Okay, we might as well run commercials. Because they're great. Wonderful people.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you ready to eliminate your home energy bill? Well, get ready to harness the sun. Go EHS, Effective Solar Solutions, by Efficient Home Services. With no upfront costs, you can save money on your utility bill and even eliminate your electric bill altogether with EHS Solar. Call EHS, the number one solar installer nationwide. We know how to customize your home. EHS handles every project in-house with no subcontractors. Remember, no upfront costs, tax breaks, and the best company in the business, Efficient Home Services. Schedule an appointment today at 727-353-3757. Visit our website and download your free buyer's guide to going solar at www.goehs.com. Go solar, go savings, go EHS. Call 727-353-3757 today to talk to our experts.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more recording careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to Toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
I'm supposed to have Allison Johnson, the senior editor from National Geographic, to talk about the National Geographic. Look at this, I'm going crazy. Big Ed, this is not, you've done this, I think, before, and I'm not used to this. I never sang the national anthem in a ballpark. Okay, it's the National Geographic Complete National Parks of the United States, third edition. 400 plus parks, monuments, battlefields, historic sites, scenic recreation areas, and seashores. And I am going to go crazy. I'm going to wait for her a little while. I don't know if she's on. If she's not, I think I'm going to give up and just play music or book buzzes so that we'll get that prepared. Is she on? No? Okay. I don't know. Okay. Look. What? Oh. Is she calling? She's supposed to be calling from New York. So I think Big Ed, we're going to have a day. Let's pull out a book buzz, boxcar, and Kevin Edwards, Be My Good, because I love him, and he's got a new book coming out, too. And so, Allison, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay, Allison. I am so glad that you are on, because I have a little problem on my end. I have an echo in my ear because we had some problems with my microphone. But, of course, we're here to talk about National Geographic, Complete National Parks of the United States, third edition, 400 plus parks, monuments, battlefields, historic sites, scenic trails, recreation areas, and seashores. So, Allison, I just want to tell my audience, of course, I'm glad to have you back because you've been on before. And as I always say, you're a big shot over there at Nat Geo, a senior editor. And you are always so much fun. And because of this echo in my ear, not on your side, I'm going to let you basically become the host of this program and let you talk, because it's difficult for me to do a dialogue. So I'll throw in a few words, but why don't you tell us, and remember, I'm telling everyone that they should give this book as a gift on Thanksgiving Day, because there are a lot of wonderful things in here. So tell us what's in it.
Yeah, and you know, I think this is an excellent gift book, especially for someone who likes to travel, who likes to see the national parks. It is the ultimate gift book for Thanksgiving or for the holidays or for a birthday. So this is our third edition of the Complete National Parks of the United States, and it is a guide to not just the national parks, but all of the monuments, battlefields, historic sites, scenic trails, recreational areas, seashores and lakeshores under the National Park Service in the United States. And it is a wonderful collection. I call it your bucket list to the National Park Service. And it truly is. It's an encyclopedia of all 400 plus sites in the United States, including all 63 national parks. We have divided the book by region, so you're going to travel from the Northeast to the Mid-Atlantic, Southeast to the Northwest, the Pacific and the Southwest, and everywhere in between, and each region opens with a map that guides you to all of these sites and recreation areas, so you can really see what is nearby your hometown and your backyard. And then within each region, we go state by state in that region so that you can get even more specific and see what is just an hour or two or even closer to your hometown. So if you're looking for a national park, there might be one nearby, or you might find a scenic trail or historical park, a national landmark, anything in between. We've got it all covered here with tips and tricks for what to do in the park, along with beautiful history and storytelling about how these parks were founded, how they're preserved, what they each represent, and of course, beautiful national photography throughout each park entry. So it's really user-friendly. It's perfect for creating your bucket list of the national parks, and it's great to use to actually plan your park trip when you're ready to get out there and go and explore.
And the wonderful thing about it, this book is a perfect resource for parents and teachers, but particularly parents, now that they realize how much their children have lost over the past 2 years, to really get them into history, geography, and to use this book as a guideline to really just boost their understanding and knowledge of history. I love the battlefield sections because that's one of the things that I always love to visit, and the historic sites. This is a history lesson in a book.
Absolutely, it is. There's so much history. There are historic landmarks throughout the country. They represent battlefields from the Revolutionary War to the Civil War, and also other moments in U.S. history, like the Trail of Tears, where indigenous people were forced to leave their homes and travel across the country to reservation sites. And you also have other moments of history. You have maritime history along the national seashores. You have civil rights history at landmarks like Martin Luther King Jr.'s birthplace, which is now a landmark in the United States. And you also have presidential history from the home of Abraham Lincoln to Theodore Roosevelt National Park. So there's a lot to discover and unpack. And like you said, it's a great teaching tool, this book, because with each entry, we give that history of the park and why these are so important, these landmarks, these trails, these parks, why are they are so important to protect and preserve. And the information that they provide really paints a picture about the history of the United States and how we got to where we are today in a beautiful way that will enlighten your children and inspire them to go and see these places and explore the outdoors, because even in the nature areas of our country, there's so much history to unpack in every part of the country.
And the wonderful thing, it is also a way to open conversations. You know, you're at Thanksgiving dinner, you're at a family event, and all you have to do is show this book out, pull this book out and say, well, where have you traveled? Which parks have you visited? I love, particularly on Thanksgiving, to have people write notes in the book, sort of like a high school yearbook style, so that those are preserved. And it's fun to see over the years, you know, if you let a five-year-old who can sign his name and then 10 years later can write a beautiful message, it becomes a family heirloom.
Absolutely, and I think it's a great way to inspire people to explore new places. You know, if they're signing, have them sign a spot in the book that they've been to that they recommend you go to, and then make an effort to see places that your friends and family have already seen and recommend you get to, or vice versa. Have them put down somewhere where they want to go to, and maybe you plan a trip together, and maybe it inspires you to go there too. And eventually you can make your way through this book. As I said, it's a bucket list experience, so you can get out there and travel. And one of the fun things is it can also become a fun game for the family. You know, the National Park System has a passport book that you get a sticker for every park that you visited, and you hold it like your own passport to go internationally traveling. And so you can all make an effort to get that passport book and compare stickers and see who's been where, and then go to this book, our book, The Complete Guide to the National Park, to choose your next best destination to fill up that passport book. And all of you can make a game of trying to get to all the parks and the historical landmarks out there together and see who fills up their bucket list faster.
Exactly. Another great thing to do with the book, like if you're watching television and a show takes place in a certain place, to pick up the Nat Geo Parks book and see what park is near it. And sort of right there you have the historical information, et cetera. So it's just useful as a tool that you can use while you're watching television.
Yeah, you can learn about the places you're seeing. A lot of the stuff we're seeing on television right now is filmed at or near the parks or the state parks when they're outdoor scenes, because there's so much landscape to use. So you can get information about those parks, or if there's a storyline you're interested in, let's say we're talking about the Civil War and you're watching some documentary or you're watching a movie that takes place then, you can go to this book and turn to all of the Civil War monuments and battlefields and really read the true history about these places, and not just see what you learn on TV, but get a deep dive into the history, see the photographs of these places, and you might take a trip to see them for yourself. There's really a lot to unpack and uncover, and it's wonderful for the family, it's wonderful for travelers, it's wonderful for armchair travelers who just want to see the world from their home, and we have beautiful National Geographic photography to help you do that.
Oh, well, the photography is always so amazing. I get lost in it.
It is wonderful. We have great travelers and photographers out there all the time, and they're researching these parks and sites nonstop. We're interacting with park rangers to get all the best hidden gems and tips and history about every park. And they are truly, our travel writers and photographers are always out on the road trying to find the most up-to-date information, expert advice, so that you know the full picture of experiences that you can have at each designation.
Well, I always say that the best jobs are with Nat Geo, whether you're a photographer, a writer, or an editor. It's just a wonderful place to work.
It is. I feel so lucky and grateful that I get to work here and see the inspiring work National Geographic is doing and explore our world through the lens of National Geographic. It truly is an honor to be a part of it.
Well, over 100 years, Nat Geo has brought us the world. It's amazing.
135 years now. It's pretty amazing. And
wow.
We are constantly exploring and finding new things. And I think it's wonderful when we can work with groups like the National Park System who are making similar efforts to explore our great world and preserve the lands and wildlife that we have in it.
So are there any hot national park destinations for 2023?
You know, in 2023, there are a lot that I'm seeing people get interested in visiting. One is the New River Gorge in West Virginia, and I think the big draw there is it's our newest national park. It was declared a national park in 2020 and became the 63rd national park. And it's a beautiful spot to visit. There's lots of hiking, and there's also the gorge where you can go rafting. There's even zip lining at the park. So I think it's an outdoor paradise for people who like to get out and explore. And the other one that people are really interested in lately is White Sands National Park in New Mexico. And just as the name describes, it's covered in white sand. It's glistening, and most people who go there say it's like being on another planet. And it's really cool to explore just as a day trip, or you can do some backcountry camping there. It's a really fascinating area to be in and very different from a lot of the other parks that we have here.
And actually, I think they have used it in some sci-fi films.
Yes, they have. So you might, when you get there, you might recognize a few of the scenes.
Exactly. I think so. It's sort of, people like to go to places where films have been shot, sort of like the film of, Field of Dreams.
Exactly.
In the national parks,
the scene.
As you said, so many films have been filmed right there in one of the national parks.
Absolutely. And even right now, there's Yellowstone on TV, a great series that people are enjoying. And I think it's bringing a lot of attention back to that park. So there's always something out in pop culture that will bring you back to the national parks.
So what is the most popular park?
The most popular park is actually the Great Smoky Mountains in Tennessee. It sees upwards of 12 million visitors a year, and so it's popular for good reason, and a lot of those visitors are actually hiking through the 70 miles of the Appalachian Trail that cross through the Great Smoky Mountains. And close behind that, we have the Grand Canyon, the Rocky Mountain National Park, and Zion National Park in Utah that see upwards of 6 million visitors a year. They're popular for good reason, and I often tell people, visit in the off-season, and that's the best chance you have to avoid the crowds. And you might have to deal with some colder weather or even hotter temperatures depending when you go. But the off-season is a great way to explore these wonderful parks, but maybe not at their most crowded time.
Well, that's what we did. As a homeschool mom and homeschool family, we could go in all those off times, and it was wonderful.
Yeah, it's the perfect time to go. I've even gone to Yellowstone in the dead of winter, and there's a lot of snow, but it makes for, you get the park to yourself, and you can go snowshoeing or snowmobiling, and you see bison and everything in between. It was like being in a snow globe. So if you can do it, definitely visit in the off season.
Okay. Well, Allison, I want to thank you so much. I couldn't do as much talking as usual, but I want to tell everyone to get National Geographic, Complete National Parks of the United States, the third edition, and it has 400 plus parks, monuments, battlefield, historic sites, scenic trails, and recreation areas and seashores. So Allison, again, thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper. And I'm sorry about this sort of mix up here with my microphone.
No worries, and thank you so much for having me. It's always a pleasure.
Okay, bye-bye now, Allison. Okay, wow, she is terrific. Usually I can joke around a little more, but this is going to drive me crazy. I think we're going to do, I don't know, do we have something good? I don't know. What? Ed is saying something to me, I think. I don't know, Ed. I'm sorry. He's... Huh? Okay. I can take them off. Oh, Ed says I should take them off. Well, that's okay now that nobody's on, so I can take them off. That's a good idea, Ed. You know, I can still hear them, actually. You know, Ed... this is... Blah, 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 blah. About as much as I can take. On Thursday, I have Ambassador Michael Oren here on Joy on Paper, and it's going to be exciting to talk to him about his new book. And I hope everything's working by then. And then next week, it's two very special programs. On Tuesday, I have the Carol J. Perry Day, and we're going to be talking about all of the things that she's doing. She is so, you know, I love somebody who is really dedicated and focused. And she reminds me of Mary Higgins Clark, who was the same way. And I understand that Carol is doing 1,500 words a day because she has a deadline coming up in November. And so it's great that I get to have a whole day for her on Tuesday. And we're going to be talking about both of her series, the Witch City Mystery Series and the Haunted Haven Mystery Series. And I love the Haunted Haven Mystery Series, which is her new series, and book two is coming out next week. And you can get it, you can order it, pre-order it on Amazon and Barnes & Noble, and it's called High Spirits, and it's a wonderful book, really fun, and it's book number two in the Haunted Haven series. And then on Thursday, I'm going to have Lee Child and his brother Andrew Child, and we're going to be talking about their new Jack Reacher book. My goodness. By the way, the new book is called No Plan B, but I did not mention it before, I don't think, that Jack Reacher has his own website, and it's really a fun website. It has all sorts of information about Jack Reacher. So if you're a fan of Jack Reacher, you have to go to his website, not just to Lee Child's website or Andrew Child's website, but go to Jack Reacher's website. And it's a great, great website. Lots of sort of all sorts of things you can search for and discover about Jack Reacher. Everything you always wanted to know about Jack Reacher is on that website. And it's very nicely done. I was really impressed with it. So I've been having fun the past few days just going back and looking over all of the Jack Reacher books because, wow, you know, it's pretty great when this is a good example. For those of you who don't know and who don't realize that Lee Child started writing the Jack Reacher books because he was fired from his job. So all of you people who are ever facing a situation like that where something bad happens to you, don't think that everything's over. Don't get, you know, all bent out of shape. Don't get all depressed. Say, well, you know, maybe this is a Lee Child day. You get fired and you say, I'm going to show you. And you go out and write a best-selling book. And then you're laughing all the way to the bank. So getting fired, I never got fired. You know why I never got fired? Because I've always been the boss. So I can fire myself. But I always have to be the boss. Only once have I been, and I think once or twice I have been an employee because I've always been the boss. But if that ever happens to you, think of it as a Lee Child Day, an opportunity to start writing. Which reminds me, November is coming up and it's NaNoWriMo. It's National Novel Writing Month in November. You start on November 1st and you have 30 days to write a book and you can win. And I did a few years ago, thanks to my goddaughter, Kanisha. She encouraged me to do NaNoWriMo, and I wrote a book in a month. And I wrote it in 26 days because I had Thanksgiving and I had to cook. So I didn't have that extra 4 days. I had to do get ready for a big family feast. So I actually wrote a novel, 50,000 words in 26 days. But you have 30 days. 50,000 words, and you can win. So go to NaNoWriMo, NaNoWriMo, National Novel Writing Month, and check it out. Sign up and find out the instructions and what you have to do, and you just have to record your writing, and then at the end of the month, show what you've written, and it's fantastic. It's really wonderful, and you'll feel really proud of yourself. Okay, that's the end because I'm all done. Big Ed, just salute me. I'll salute you because you are going through heck too here. It's not easy when we have all of these technical problems. Everybody, just write, start writing. Say something nice to somebody today because I'm worn out. I'll say something nice to Big Ed. Okay, bye-bye, everybody. Let's play some music on it. Thank you.